Today we are I should have just finished up Mark chapter 10 last week, but I did not. There were a couple things I needed to work on, and I just didn't have the chance to finish that up. But for now, we are going to finish up. We looked at blind Bartimaeus last week. And of course, the idea of a ransom. And we looked at Bartimaeus and his healing, along with some of the interesting events that occurred at that time. So, if you remember, I closed out last time talking about the trying to put yourself in Bartimaeus's shoes, trying to see what things would be like. As a blind man who might have heard about Jesus, but beyond that hasn't really been able to have well you know is blind can't really function as normally in society. And so he hears about this Jesus long before, and then he hears that he's passing through his town, passing through Jericho, where he is, and he gets all excited. Of course, wouldn't you be excited? The New King James simply says that he rose, but again, that Greek implies in verse 50 that the Greek there implies that it was something closer to jumping up or springing up. And this man was so excited, and again, this is not something that I think we could blame him for. So then we see on here a request for healing. Let's look at these last two verses. Actually, let's read all of this section here. Mark chapter 10, verses 46 through 52, so we can get the context again and be reminded of it. And in particular, verses 51 and 52, which is what we're looking at specifically at this time. All right. Now they came to Jericho. As he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great multitude, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the road begging. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Then many warned him to be quiet, but he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." So Jesus stood still and commanded him to be called. Then they called the blind man, saying to him, "Be of good cheer, rise, he is calling you." And throwing aside his garment, he rose, sprung up, and came to Jesus. So Jesus answered and said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said to him, "Rabboni, that I may receive my sight." Then Jesus said to him, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus on the road. So again, Jesus asked the same question here. He asked the same question of this blind man as he asked James and John in verse 36. What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Now, what did James and John ask for? Well, in verse 37, "Grant us that we may sit one on your right hand, the other on your left, in your glory." They asked for greatness. But the blind man didn't want that. Bartimaeus didn't want greatness. But he did want the impossible. Well, the impossible apart from Jesus. He wanted to be able to see again. Recall that this word in Greek suggests that I may receive my sight. This idea here suggests that he was once able to see. I don't know what that is like necessarily to lose one of your senses, but I'm sure some of us could imagine just being in a dark place for so long and knowing what things used to look like and just not being able to function that way anymore, trying to rely on your other senses to make do. It's a hard thing. He asks, not for greatness again, but that his sight may be restored. He calls Jesus Rabboni, which John translates in John chapter 20, verse 16 as teacher. Now, this word is only used twice, Rabboni. Rabbi, of course, is the typical word, but Rabboni is only used twice in the New Testament here and with Mary Magdalene. They're in John chapter 20. We see in the eyes of Bartimaeus that not only that this is the son of David, which we saw him confess out loud in verses 47 and 48, and the son of David is a designation for the Messiah, for the Christ, but also that he is a great teacher, Rabboni as a teacher. Matthew and Luke say that he addressed him as Lord. We see in Matthew chapter 20, verse 33, and Luke 18, 41. He is the Lord. He sees this man before him as the Christ, as the son of David, as a great teacher, and as Lord. He sees him as this, all without being able to use his eyes. He sees from what little exposure that he's had to Jesus that while the 12 were with him for 3 years, they're still not quite seeing, and perhaps wouldn't see until Pentecost. You know, his faith, as we see in verse 52, his faith has made him well. And then we note that he goes with Jesus along the road from Jericho to Jerusalem. So apparently Pam is having some issues too with her video. I've had some issues myself. Hopefully, of course, I'm using a different app now in order to view them. So hopefully we can get hopefully it'll get resolved somehow. Hopefully Pam can watch it later. I'm so sad about that. So sorry. All right. So, that's, as I said, only a few thoughts there on finishing up 51 and 52. And any thoughts that we might be able to bring out upon this blind man before we move on to chapter 11. Okay. All right. Let me. This presents now a transition. We are transitioning from one huge section of Mark to the last section of Mark. We're going from, you see at the very top there in the green, it says from Galilee to Jerusalem. And now we've finished this section and we're moving on now to the next one, along with a new chapter. We see here that this is chapter 11 and lots of things here. Temple, Jesus went, Bethany, forgive is a big part of this chapter, heaven, authority. And so we're going to be looking at all of these things in this particular chapter, chapter 11. Again, some great stuff that's presented here. And again, since we're moving on to a new section, we note that we have this map here as well, or this roadmap, if you will. We were there talking in this bottom middle section, in this third category here. And we're now moving to the top right. And we see that moving to that top right there, the suffering servant. And this is, we just finished that blind man there, Bartimaeus, that area that's been sandwiched by the two blind men that have been healed, both in Mark 8 and here in Mark 9, Mark 10. And now we're going to consider this suffering servant. Suffering servant, just seeing if there's anything behind me right there. And we see that there are four things that are talked about here in terms of Jesus as a suffering servant. He is a king in the first 11 verses, which we'll talk about today. He is a lawgiver that we see in the rest of chapter 11 and also chapter 12. He is a prophet that we'll see in chapter 13, and he is a sacrifice that we see in the first part of chapter 14. And so this is again the concept of Jesus being a suffering servant. Let's consider his being a king today. But first, let's look at this nice map once again. I see Rebecca. Sorry, Ken is here. Rebecca's been here. Ken is here. Hello, and Kathy Holmes. Wonderful, wonderful. So let's look at this map again. We have moved from the Jordan River you see in the upper right there onto Jericho, which is where we were with the healing of this blind man. And now we're headed toward Jerusalem. And then we'll note here in chapter 11 and verse 1, it says, "Now they drew near Jerusalem to Bethphage and Bethany at the Mount of Olives. He sent two of his disciples." So we'll see that the map carries him all the way to Jerusalem and the Mount of Olives, which is right there. And so the road is a little bit different than what I have here, but he basically goes straight from Jericho to Jerusalem at this time, or at least the suburbs of Jerusalem, if you will, Bethany and Bethphage. And so we'll consider those and what exactly that means in a little bit. And again, remember, he is going uphill. He is heading uphill toward toward the cross where he will end up. So that's a major thing to consider. All right, so we are in this last section here. His final week in Jerusalem. So that's the new section, final week in Jerusalem, from chapter 11 and verse 1 all the way to the end of chapter 16. We see that he is teaching, that there's a big section of teaching here from 11:1 to 13:37. We see that he is a king here in the first 11 verses of chapter 11, and we see that this is Sunday, and we'll talk more about that in just a second. Let's consider this passage here, and then we'll look at the timeline and figure out where exactly we are here. All right, the first 11 verses here of Mark chapter 11. "Now when they drew near Jerusalem to Bethphage and Bethany at the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, and he said to them, 'Go into the village opposite you, and as soon as you have entered it, you will find a colt tied, on which no one has sat. Loose it and bring it. And if anyone says to you, "Why are you doing this?" say, "The Lord has need of it," and immediately he will send it here." So they went their way and found the colt tied by the door outside on the street, and they loosed it. But some of those who stood there said to them, "What are you doing, loosing the colt?" And they spoke to them just as Jesus had commanded. So they let them go. Then they brought the colt to Jesus and threw their clothes on it, and he sat on it. And many spread their clothes on the road, and others cut down leafy branches from the trees and spread them on the road. Then those who went before and those who followed cried out, saying, "Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the kingdom of our father David that comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest!" And Jesus went into Jerusalem and into the temple. So when he had looked around at all things, as the hour was already late, he went out to Bethany with the 12. So, looking at this passage, let's bring this back. Let's consider the timeline for a second. It's a very interesting thing. And why did I choose Sunday as another thing to consider? How do we know this took place on Sunday? Well, there's a traditional timeline to consider. The traditional timeline presents these last several chapters from the triumphal entry to the resurrection as occurring in the period of 1 week. And part of the reason for this is that the triumphal entry, which is what this is called here, in John's gospel occurs 5 days before the Passover. And if we turn to John chapter 12, John chapter 12, verse 1, it states, "Then 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, who had been dead, and whom he had raised from the dead." Okay, so that's 6 days. The events there in verses 1 through 11 take place on a particular day. And then we see in verse 12, "The next day, a great multitude had come to the feast when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem. They took branches," and then we see, as we continue reading, this is the same event that we're reading about here in Mark chapter 11. So, as a result, this makes this triumphal entry as having occurred on Sunday. So, Matthew and Mark have the clearest timelines after this event. But there is an apparent conflict when you read these two accounts, Matthew and Mark. Mark seems to state that the temple was cleansed during that particular event occurred on the same day as the triumphal entry there in Mark or Matthew chapter 21, where Mark states it occurred on the next day, Monday. First, so there's a couple things to consider. First, they don't claim that they wrote events in chronological order, so there is no conflict there per se. Second, I think that Mark's account, now you can take my opinion, you can go with Mark or go with Matthew. I'm going to go with Mark, not just because we're studying Mark right now, but I think it reflects the correct timeline of events, something more chronological. We see that Mark splits up the withering fig tree, the withering of the fig tree, and the lesson associated with it, while Matthew does not. He puts those two things together. And I think it makes sense from a storytelling perspective to keep them together. Since life rarely works that way, I think Mark's timeline makes more sense, that the triumphal entry occurs, Jesus looks around the temple, goes back to his place in Bethany, and then on the next day he comes in. On his way in, the fig tree withers. And he cleanses the temple and things of that nature. And so I think that is a more accurate way of looking at things, at least in terms of chronology. You might disagree with me, and that would be fine. And one of the reasons for looking at this and considering this is that I plan to break up events by day. And so Sunday is the events of the triumphal entry, and it's the only thing that we have recorded on that particular day in the Gospel of Mark. So I think that we can go with that. By the time that Jesus had entered into Jerusalem, we note in verse 11 that it was already pretty late. There wasn't a whole lot of opportunity for him to do other things. It was already pretty late in the day, so instead of doing much healing or teaching, we note that he simply looked around and returned to where he was lodging in Bethany. And of course, there are other timeline issues that we'll talk about later on in the week, and we'll certainly cover those later. All right, so that's the timeline consideration there. Let's look at the location. The location, and this is going to be fun. Got a lot of graphics for this one. So, Jesus is coming to Jerusalem from Jericho, and he is passing by Bethphage, Bethany, and the Mount of Olives. We see that there in chapter 11 and verse 1. We'll note all the way in chapter 11 that Jesus is staying in Bethany with his disciples, possibly with Simon the leper or with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. You know, he's got connections with both of these groups. We'll see an event later with Simon the sword, Simon the leper, recorded later in Mark chapter 14 and verse 3. So we'll keep that discussion for another time. Of course, the latter three, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, were great friends of Jesus. We see that in John 11, verse 5. These three locations, Bethphage, Bethany, and the Mount of Olives, were very near Jerusalem. Bethany being about 2 miles away, and the other two on yeah, and the other two were on the way, Bethphage and the Mount of Olives. We see the distance there in John chapter 11 and verse 18. So let's take a look at, let's see if I got this map up here. So this is a map of what it looks like today. And if you have eagle eyes, you might be able to spot a certain things, the Western Wall of Gethsemane, the Mount of Olives, you might be able to spot. But here we go. This might make things a little more clear. Let me move myself out the way. We have Bethany in the bottom right there. And that's, ooh, well, that's not the right thing to do. There we go. I'm trying to move myself out the way. We have Bethany in the bottom right, and that's about 2 miles away from Jerusalem. We have Bethphage there at the foot of the Mount of Olives. And then we have Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem today is a big, sprawling metropolitan area, but this is the outline roughly of what Jerusalem looked like in Jesus's day. We see the temple there in blue and the outline of the city in red. There's a right below the temple, to the south of the temple, is what's called the City of David. So this was the original section of the city of Jerusalem that David had conquered and that David was in charge of. Solomon added on to it with the temple that we see up there. It's not the same temple, but it was the same location that it was built upon. And then some other places in terms of the in the course of time, built around it. We see the old city and some things like that are in that particular area. And of course, we'll talk more about that in a few moments. So let's see. So he comes up from Bethany. This is the road roughly that he was on, from Jericho to Bethany. And then from Bethany, he goes up to Bethphage. And so Bethphage, and he is, according to Matthew's account, let's see if I can pull up something. So Matthew suggests that they are in Bethphage when Jesus asks his disciples to go into the village opposite you, again, suggesting that the colt they're about to look for is in Bethany. We see that in Matthew chapter 21 and verse 1. As again, you see on this map, Bethphage is right there at the Mount of Olives. Of course, Matthew also indicates this. Here is the, so, hold on. I have that up here. Yeah. Here is the elevation that Google provides. The elevation from Bethphage to the top of the Mount of Olives. And you can see that he likely is going to go up the Mount of Olives there from Bethphage, and ride the colt down from there. So the height here is about 36 meters or 120 or about 120 feet. All right. This would mean that he passed by Bethany on the way to Bethphage. This particular map would indicate this. He could have arranged for the use of the colt as he was passing through. That's one possibility. Or he could have just known that his instructions would allow his disciples to acquire the colt. This meant that his disciples had to backtrack to acquire the colt, as I think is evident here. They would have had to backtrack. At the very least, he likely arranged for lodging in Bethany on his way through. Again, here is a map of Jerusalem. Let's see if I can pull that up. Here's a map of Jerusalem in the first century. This one is a little hard to see, but this is the orange outline is the city in the time of Jesus. There's some stuff to the north that was added on after Jesus by Herod Agrippa the First, who was the King Herod of Acts chapter 12. He added on to the city, expanded it, and done things like that. But at the time of Jesus, that did not exist. And it again, it shows the reasoning for my outline, the outline that I gave on the last map, the outline of Jerusalem. Here's another map that doesn't quite follow that outline, but I wanted to show it because I find I like this one a little bit better. It shows the contour lines along with the roads, and you can sort of see what roads Jesus might have taken in order to go through here. So here's Gethsemane, here's the Mount of Olives over here. So he could have come around here, gone up to the temple like this on this windy road, or he could have come up around and gone into the entrance of Jerusalem through here. And my inkling is that he went to this more north entrance by the pool of by this particular pool by the sheep gate, this area here. So that's my take on that. Maybe there's a passage I'm missing that can explain that a little bit more exactly what he did, but this is my opinion at this time. Next, I want to go through this is a really neat video I want to show, and what I'm doing is it's going to be silent and you'll see me next to it. So this is pretty neat. This is a video of someone. So in Jerusalem, when you go to Jerusalem, I've not been, but I know people who have been in Jerusalem, they have a model of Jerusalem at the time of Jesus. And of course of the first century. I should say the first century because I have on the stuff that Herod Agrippa the First added on. But I want to show that to you so you can get some idea of the lay of the land, of the feel of Jerusalem, this great city that Jesus is riding into at this time. So here you see the wall that's closest to us right now is the additional wall that was built by Herod Agrippa. The wall sort of in the middle distance was there with Jesus in Jesus's time. And then you can see the temple in the background there. And the city to the right, that was there during the time of Jesus. And this guy, he goes around this model, and it's just fantastic. I'll put a link to the model or to the video in the comments later on, but I did want to show this and point out a few things just so you can see the view that everyone is taking in here. And again, to the right is well, now it's on the in the very foreground, you see that city set up on a hill. That valley to the right is the Valley of Hinnom. It is the valley that derives its that well that becomes the model for what hell is going to be like. We see that valley there, and now it's in the foreground, that southern valley. And here we see the old city, Mount Zion, to the well, it depends on how you want to view that, but modern day Zion is to the left there. We see to the right here the city of David, what was originally this the portion that David had conquered and that David had been a part of or had ruled over. And of course you can see that temple in the distance as well. And it's just a phenomenal video. In the bottom right now, you see the Pool of Siloam, which makes an appearance in, I think, John chapter 9, I believe. And then to the right here, you see the Kidron Valley. The Kidron Valley, you see the Valley of Hinnom and the Kidron Valley, they meet up in the corner here. The City of David here on the far right. And then you'll see this a couple other times as we move on. Again, in the far distance, you see, I say far distance, now it's the middle distance, you see the walls to the temple. And the only existing wall currently to this temple is the Western Wall, right? What they call the Wailing Wall, and it's on what the one you can see on the left. I'm pointing, and it's all backwards for you, so you might not know what I'm talking about here, but that's okay. Now we see this is a point. We're at the point where Hinnom and and Kidron. These two valleys meet, and we see again the corner of the city of David. Again, it's a phenomenal model that they have there. All these buildings that were built, just fantastic. I can't ever get my hair to do right in these videos. I don't understand it. Need a haircut is what I need. But then you can see sort of where, where Nehemiah is in that, and where Nehemiah is building the city wall, and the people are building the city wall and building their homes. You can sort of see how that could be in some of these areas here. Okay, we just saw on the right the temple and the connection here with the city of David and the temple. And how difficult it was to conquer this place because of the walls and the natural barriers. The hills made it a great fortress. And so it took quite a bit of doing in order to conquer this place. And so David amazingly did that when the Jebusites were in control, and the Babylonians and the Romans did so with all of their might. We're coming up on the temple now. On the left is where that upper, those awnings there, that's where the Sanhedrin met. Here you see the court of the Gentiles. Around here, and then you see the temple proper in the center, and you see, look at that gate, man, look at how the steps leading up to that. I don't think that this was the road and this was the door that Jesus entered into, but I do think that it is an important thing. Okay, so on the right, you'll see another wall extending from the temple that was added on by Herod Agrippa. And so all this was opened up until what's called Antonia Fortress, which are these four columns that you see in the middle distance there. And that second wall again in the middle distance was there during the time of Jesus. So Jesus could have come up that road and gone into the temple from there. And that this could have been the road that they were laying the fronds, the leaves, and their clothes on. And again, all this part that we see here was added on later. One thing I forgot to point out, and I should have, when we started the video, there are two possible locations that people give for the crucifixion of Jesus. And one of them, let's see if I can orient myself in this new direction. One of them is they're both in this area that Herod built up later. Of course, it was outside the city at the time. And so I think we're coming up on the secondary location. The non-traditional location is right around here, a little bit in the upper part of this screen here. And the other one is kind of where we started. So it's off in the distance, way over there, next to the city there. You can see that wall in the middle distance was originally there, and you can see off to the right a little bit is the traditional location for the crucifixion of Jesus. And again, I just wanted to take some time to look at this video. It's just phenomenal to look at this, to consider what this city again that Jesus had approached was coming to. All right. While we go through, I do want to keep playing the video, but I want to kind of move on. Oh, actually, here we go. Here's a good thing right here. Here we see a more aerial view of this city, and you can see how big. I want you to get an idea of just how big this temple complex is, and how it is the central nexus for life in Jerusalem, how large this is, and how much area it took of the whole city. Man, it is a big part of what we see here. And not only that, but we notice the fact that it when Solomon built this thing, originally the original temple, it doubled the size of Jerusalem, at least surface area wise. And so here we see it's still a large part of the city. How much in our lives does the Lord, does the church take up in our lives? How much does he take up? I just find it a fascinating, we can see where their focus was. It was on their faith, on their religion. The downside of that, of course, is that it was on their faith, on their religion, not on the Lord, for many of them anyway. Okay, the video is starting up again. I will point out the potential possible location of Golgotha is about straight ahead now, where people believe it happened. So I did want to point that out. So I hope you enjoyed that brief look at ancient Jerusalem. Let us go on to the next section here, the cult. Oops. The cult. Let's consider a few things about this. Jesus, he tells two of his disciples to go into the village opposite them, again, likely Bethany, and take the first young donkey or colt that they find. As a side note, personally, I would find it deliciously ironic. It doesn't name who the two disciples are that Jesus calls on to do this, but I would find it just amazingly ironic if these two disciples were James and John. I mean, wouldn't you? People aspiring to greatness reduced to running errands, reduced to errand boys. Well, Jesus would be teaching them again in this point the greatness of service. But again, as it stands, the disciples are unnamed. So, my question, what do you think's going on through these disciples' minds? I don't think they know about any prearrangement with anybody in Bethany to get this cult, if a cult, if there is indeed an arrangement ahead of time. So what are your thoughts on that? What would be going on through your mind if you were these disciples? And I have some thoughts, and just wondering what you might think. Sam, any thoughts?
Yeah, I would think, well, first of all, they were with him walking through Bethany and coming in. And so if he says, oh, by the way, just go down the road and the first cap, first colt you see, bring it, then I'd be going like, well, hold it. I can't just go pick up and grab somebody's colt and walk off with it. And of course, in the other accounts, it says, and if somebody tells you, what are you doing? This is what you tell them and they'll let you do it. But, it was an unusual event. For one, they walked everywhere. For him to get a colt would have been an unusual thing. And of course, the significance, which you'll cover here in a minute, of why he was getting it and what it meant. I don't know if they were thinking that yet. I think that was escaping them too.
Well, at the same time, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. We'll probably get into that. We're running low on time, and I'm glad I took the time to look at that video. But at the same time, we are running low on time at the moment. But we'll see what we can get through. I personally would be uncertain about apparently stealing something like this. I mean, Jesus obviously wouldn't be stealing, but this. It has the appearance of theft. I'm not sure I would be too comfortable doing this, but again, the Lord asked people to do things that they weren't comfortable doing on many occasions. I'm thinking of the man in 1 Kings chapter 20 who refused to strike a prophet. I'm not going to hit you. And then he was, I can't remember what happened to the man who didn't strike him, but something bad happened to him. Ezekiel, he balked at baking something over human feces in Ezekiel chapter 4. I think I would balk at that too. Peter, again, he refused to eat anything unclean, we see in Acts chapter 10. So he does have people do things that are uncomfortable to them. Matthew suggests that the colt was tied to a donkey as well, as we see in Matthew 21 too, presumably to its mother. Again, maybe Jesus arranged this ahead of time, or perhaps this was an ostensibly random cult that they were apparently stealing. Jesus tells them to tell the owner simply that the Lord has need of it. We see that's exactly what happens, and the owners immediately acquiesce to the claim. Now, what would you do if you were the owners of this cult? Would you have acquiesced so easily? Under what circumstances do you think you would have allowed them to take your cult? I have a couple thoughts, but I'm curious what you might think. Sam?
Well, I think that there's obviously providence going on here. I mean, there's, you know, Simon of Cyrene, you know, was there to carry the cross because God wanted him there and wanted it recorded, right? So there's wherever this, you know, there was definitely going to be a cult. It wasn't going to be like you couldn't find a cult to make the triumphal entry. And whether or not it was prearranged in an earthly manner or whether it was a miraculous event. But one of the things that I've never really thought about was, so obviously they're not taking the cult permanently. The cult isn't mentioned later. So what does this kind of do with this cult? You know, so there's the cult that Jesus rode in the triumphal entry, right? And he's got this cult now, and people know this is the one that Jesus rode. And after the week, of course, in a week, Jesus is going to be on a cross too. So it's just, you think about the actual personal lives of all these people that are just kind of by the way characters, you know, like the guy who owned the cult. What were they telling people? That, you know, these guys came up and took my cult, and I said, yeah, it's okay. And then Jesus was riding on it. You know, it's just fascinating, all the little details that make it real.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a couple additional thoughts there. Possibilities here. Perhaps the owners recognized Jesus as the Lord, and perhaps even his disciples. They might have recognized, oh, wait, I didn't recognize you at first. You say the Lord has need of it. I know who you are now. Of course, go take it. Again, perhaps the owners thought they meant the Lord, i.e. God needs it, which, you know, wouldn't be wrong either. God does need it at this time. Again, maybe the owners thought that they meant that their Lord, lowercase l, or master, needed it. Oh, our master needs this. Or again, maybe it was arranged ahead of time and the disciples just didn't know about it because they seem kind of surprised by this. At least that's the impression I get from the clear reading here. In any event, Jesus knew that this line would work, that the line, the Lord has need of it, that it would work. And he did return to Bethany afterward, we see in verse 11, which likely included returning the donkey, returning the colt. As Jesus said, the colt was tied up by the door outside the street. It was right there. It was just right there on the side of the road. We see that the colt had never been ridden before. This was a sign of honor to allow someone to be the first to ride a particular animal. Of course, this was a fulfillment of the prophecy given in Zechariah chapter 9 and verse 9 that both Matthew and John referenced. They're not referenced here in this passage, but Matthew and John referenced them, and you can see their references there on the screen, Matthew 21:5 and John 12:15. In lieu of a saddle, his disciples, perhaps many who traveled with him, at least since Jericho, place their clothes, likely their cloaks, you know, because they're not going to run around naked, right? They likely took their outer coats and put them on the donkey here. Some of them, Jesus wouldn't need all of them to do that, but some of them did that, and Jesus was able to ride the donkey into town, into Jerusalem. All right. We are unfortunately out of time. I've got a couple other points here, the procession and the return to Bethany. And so we'll talk about that next week. And then we'll also talk about the cursed fig tree. At least the first couple of verses that talk about it. We may or may not talk about the lesson from the fig tree since that happens a little bit later in the chapter. But here is, that's our lesson for today. Again, if you would like to join us for our song service in a little bit, I certainly encourage that. Please do so. We are going to have that in just a moment at 6 o'clock. So again, stick around. We'll be right here. So, we'll see you in a little bit. All right. God bless you. Thank you for being here.